From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a world-famous music artist sat with a book he had been dying to read and yet was scared to open. You know Pharrell Williams as the voice and the talent behind the song Happy. He has produced his own music for decades, and he has produced for countless other stars around the world. He considers himself an optimist, a lover, a sunny personality. But when he sat there with that book, he felt things, he admitted, he had never felt before. He was finally learning about his family ancestry. Tonight on PBS, Pharrell's story is at the heart of the season premiere of Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates Jr. For Pharrell, it's the story that so many African Americans have faced. Ancestors born into slavery, very few documents or letters or evidence that they lived at all. But as the PBS show so often does, they were able to track down some history of Pharrell's family. I watched the episode last night. It is painful and dark at times and illuminating and I think necessary. This hour, we're discussing how we trace our roots. We'll discuss how to do it for yourself and for your family. And we'll discuss the challenge that Black families in particular have faced with this issue. My guests this hour include Nick Sheedy, the lead genealogist for Finding Your Roots, Season 7. Nick, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheryl Wills is with us, an award-winning journalist, anchor for Spectrum News NY1, and author of Emma and the Emancipation of Grandpa Sandy Wills, and Emancipated, My Family's Fight for Freedom, and Die Free, a Heroic Family Tale. Cheryl, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Good to see you. Good to hear you. Thanks, Evan. Appreciate you.
You got it. And Teej Jenkins is the host of WXXI's Arts in Focus and manager and producer for WXXI. Hi, Teej. Nice to have you on this program.
Hi, Evan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about today.
Well, I want to remind listeners, Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates Jr. is going to have 10 new episodes through May 2021. New season premiered Tuesday, January 19th. And so I just want to mention again, I want everyone to understand just how powerful these episodes can be. And so when you've got Pharrell there telling his story, Nick Sheedy, let me start with you here. I know you're not sitting down with Pharrell without finding some answers, but it's amazing to see what you were able to do. We've got a clip which we'll share in just a moment here. But is it as emotional for you guys creating this as it is for us to watch it?
Oh, for sure. It's not lost on us that this is going to be very moving and powerful. And the producers want to find stories that are compelling and tear-jerking, to get that reaction from our guest, but also, to make good TV and to encourage and inspire our viewers to learn more about their families. So, yeah, for sure. And I read these episodes and, I usually don't see the episodes cut until everybody else is watching. But I read the scripts and, you can just imagine how the guests are going to react to some of these reveals and then in the interview. But then, of course, we read the episode script to fact check it. And I'm reading through sometimes, and sometimes the emotion doesn't come through in the written scripts. And then I see the end product and I'm moved, tears come to my eyes. So for sure.
Let's listen to a clip if we can. And let me just set this up a little bit here, because Pharrell, when he finally sits down with Henry Louis Gates Jr. and he's got that book, the book of family ancestry in front of him, they start moving through it and he starts to get answers on who some of his ancestors were. And at first it is exciting. He says he's feeling almost a tingle of excitement. I mean, it's a real energy to it. But then the reality of what happened to his ancestors hits him and his feelings change. And this scene from tonight's show is Henry Louis Gates Jr. talking about how Pharrell sort of is feeling that shift in emotions as he learns about his family, what they were born into, what they were up against, and who was responsible for it. Let's listen.
Pharrell's feelings were about to darken and darken significantly. According to his third great aunt, Farrell's ancestors were owned by a man named Andrew Jackson May, a planter in Nash County, North Carolina. In her interview, Jane recalled minute details about their daily lives on May's plantation.
We lived in log houses with stick and dirt chimneys. They called them the slave houses. I worked on the farm, cutting corn stalks and tending to cattle in slavery time. Sometimes I swept the yards after working all day. There was a task of cotton to be picked and spun by them. What kind of people? What kind of people?
You want to see what kind of people? Turn the page. Farrell, you're looking at the man who owned your ancestors. That is the kind of person who would enslave another person. That is Andrew Jackson May.
It's messing with my mind. It's messing with my spirit. Mm. It's messing with who I am. Mm. It's messing with everything that I represent. Because I have no empathy for him.
Why would you?
I can't describe this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful to have any kind of connection, you know, information on my ancestors, and even to hear things in their own words.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this anger and just resentment.
That is from the episode that you will see tonight on WXXI-TV. And I mentioned it is hard to watch. It's hard to see Farrell go through that and to think about, you know, what do you say about someone who enslaved your ancestors? I don't want to give too much away, but I will also mention that Farrell is keenly aware that his last name, his surname, Williams, is not an African name. And there are some painful lessons about where that name came from. All of these things, as he said, are things that were important for him to learn, but were things that were difficult to learn. Cheryl, what goes through your mind when you hear that clip?
You know, it's very similar, and I want to salute the team for finding your roots. I'm a big fan, and I didn't have the benefit of having their expertise when I did my search 10 years ago. I, too, found both slave owners who owned my family on both sides, and it is shocking when you put a face to the name. I'm Cheryl Wills, and the reason I'm Cheryl Wills is because in 1850, a slave trader named Edmund Wills in Haywood County, Tennessee, bought my great-great-great-grandfather at the age of 10. That was mind-blowing, mind-boggling, shocking to learn that we've been carrying this slave owner's name unbroken for generations. And I was the first in the family to say, hey, everybody, to those living and those on the other side, this is where our last name came from. And I can relate to Farrell's anger. I can relate to his resentment, but I use it for empowerment. I take this story into schools all over the country, and I let them know anger is a useless emotion, but empowerment is the one that will get you to the next step. And I let children know this is a story of people who surmounted insurmountable obstacles, and we can use this as a weapon of peace. Not of war, not of division. We are to be really admired as a people for surviving chattel slavery. If it wasn't for the strength of our families, I wouldn't be talking to you right now, Evan.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I'm trying to hold back from giving away too much about tonight's episode, but let me also just say, having watched it last night, I got up this morning and I showed it to my son and I watched it
yeah.
again because it's so important. It's so powerful. And Farrell, I think, recounts some of those same feelings that you just shared, Cheryl, in that
yep.
he says he loves this country. He
yep.
loves the idea of the country. And he now embraces the complexity of that history and what it means for himself and for future generations. So when you think about the name Wills, when you think yep. about Farrell having the name Williams,
yes.
You know, there are some who might understandably say, well, get that name off
yeah.
of our family. But it sounds to you like you're trying to reclaim something as your own.
A few of my friends yeah. who are African-American have banished their mm-hmm. surnames. I'm glad I did not. And let me explain why. Because it was the only link I had left to this era. And what we are seeing, Evan, in this country is that there is a big rewrite. There's a movement to rewrite history. There are people who are rewriting the Civil War. They're saying, oh, it wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. It was about some. So if I had changed my name to, say, a name from West Africa, I would have never found Sandy Wills. And if he had changed his name, as many African Americans did after the Civil War, many of them took on the last name Lincoln for Abraham Lincoln. Many of them took on the last name Washington for George Washington, and of course Freeman, because they were free men. Had Sandy Wills done that after he fought in the Civil War, I certainly would have never found him. And also, holding on to the last name Wills is evidence that a crime against humanity happened in my family. And I hold this, Cheryl Wills, as evidence for anyone, any of these people in these echo chambers who want to rewrite slavery, who want to rewrite the Holocaust, who want to rewrite all the horrors that have happened throughout our nation and world history. I hold that name as evidence. Oh, no. You will not rewrite slavery as if it was something benevolent. It was a horror show, and the reason I'm Cheryl Wills is Exhibit A.
Well, Cheryl, let me ask you a question that came to mind for me, and it just came from a listener who sent me a note asking, do they ever show the slave owner's descendants and get their reaction? It would be interesting to hear that reaction and to further the conversation by connecting the descendants. So let me also
Excellent question. Yeah, it is.
And frankly, it's a question that is almost, I mean, I'll ask all three of our guests about this subject. I mean, it's almost inevitable, Cheryl, when you watch this, that every viewer will be wondering, is Pharrell going to try to find the descendants?
Well, I did.
Yeah.
I did track down the descendants. And remarkably, the plantation is exactly as my ancestors left it, complete with one
wow.
surviving slave cabin. So they were a little hesitant at first, understandably. My grandma Emma, who I wrote a children's book about, the family that owned my third great grandmother, they're all still alive and well, and they still own the same plantation. And it took years, but I finally met them, and they were wonderful. They gave me a tour. They had no idea about the slave legacy on their property, and I went to the burial ground where my grandfather, Sandy Wills, and Emma are buried in unmarked graves. They had been told for generations, don't touch anything on that hill. You could do anything with everything else. They still even manufacture cotton, just like they did centuries ago. But they were told, don't touch anything on that hill. That's where the slaves were buried. And I finally discovered where Sandy and Emma's final resting places. And I was just about to go with an archaeological team to start digging to do a DNA identification, and the pandemic hit. So when the pandemic is over, I plan to resume negotiations with the family because they're nervous about this. And they expressed to me, we don't want to be called racist. We don't want to be responsible for what our families did. I said, listen, I don't think you're racist. I'm not here to hold you responsible. I just primarily want to get my family off your property once and for all and give them a decent burial, A. But B, I want you to know, slavery was as American as apple pie, and it had been normalized, and none of them thought they were doing anything wrong. There were people, of course, abolitionists who knew it was very wrong, but for the people who lived this for generation and willed, literally willed people as and their seeds, women, they would say, your embryo even belongs to me and my children. They didn't realize that they were doing something wrong. They went to church and prayed every Sunday. They thought they were good Christians. So I wanted a meeting of the minds with them, and I wanted to get to know them, and they couldn't have been nicer. And, you know, this is a full circle moment for my family that never lived to see this day, and it changes your life. Evan. It changes your life.
I admire you so much for doing it that way, Cheryl. I will also, you know, I admit when I rewatched the PBS show Finding Your Roots this morning with my 8-year-old, almost 9-year-old son, I asked him, I said, how would you feel if we found out in our ancestry that that was our ancestor, that we had someone in that position? And I'll keep his thoughts on that private and mine somewhat private, but I think it's an important conversation to have because, as you say, Cheryl, you know, there is a sensitivity, there is a real sensitivity, some would say a fragility among current generation white Americans to say, well, I didn't do that. That wasn't me. You know, don't put that on me.
Right.
And Pharrell, you know, I will say he briefly talks about what it would be like to at least talk to the descendants and what that conversation might feel like. And you'll see that in the show tonight. Is there any sense that there is any debt or something owed, even if you meet that family, and in your case, they were lovely to you, they were kind and generous to you, but do you feel anything owed?
You know, this country owes me, and I don't think it's fair to blame a particular family. Like, they clearly have benefited from slavery, okay? They're all very wealthy. They inherited wealth, and frankly, that's what slavery was all about. This is for me and mine, and we want to make sure our family down the line is set. And whoever backs we have to break and step on, so be it. So, you know, half of this country's wealth is traced back to slavery, even here in the North in New York City where I am. But I am reluctant to blame any particular family. I think this country, this Congress should get together and make amends. And shame on them that here we are in 2021 and this still hasn't happened. The United States rubber-stamped chattel slavery and destroyed lives, and then they doubled down with Jim Crow and destroyed lives again and again. So I think this country should make amends. I don't think it means getting a stimulus check like we're doing now, but I do think that they should make amends for the cycles of poverty in urban areas. And they should make amends for all of the redlining, and they should take care of this situation that they created, that I report on the news every night.
Yeah, and
they should take care of that, and they could do it. And let me just say quickly, one of my favorite shows is Sanford and Son, and Good Times. I was watching Good Times the other day, and he said, I don't believe that a man could be put on the moon and this country cannot end drugs in the black community. And I was like, wow, that was 40 years ago James Evans said that, and it's still relevant today.
Well, and just to sort of close the loop on the point that the emailer had made, he followed up to say, Evan, I'd be interested in knowing how generational wealth was passed down to the owners, to the owners of enslaved persons, and how generational poverty may have also impacted the descendants of enslaved people.
Right, and I'm happy to speak to that very quickly. I don't want to dominate the conversation, but generational poverty absolutely passed down. And that's what I want your listeners and even the children I visit in schools to understand. The poverty that you see in black communities all over the country was by design. I am the first in my family to own a home and have wealth to pass on to my son. Now, you stop and think about that. I didn't have a grandparent. Everyone started over from scratch. And if you want to talk about anger, as Pharrell said, that's the one thing I'm angry about, because slavery was designed to keep black people in a perpetual state of poverty. So other people from even other countries can come and say, hey, welcome to America. This is the land of your dreams. And look, you're already better than them. And that's precisely what happened. So here we are, more than 150 years later, and I'm the first one that's going to pass wealth to my family. My mother didn't, my grandmothers didn't, my grandfathers didn't. Everyone started over from zero. And if there's any resentment I have, that's it.
Now you know, listeners, why Cheryl Wills wanted to write these stories, and you can find her books detailing these remarkable family stories. Teach Jenkins, what goes through your mind when you hear Pharrell kind of grappling with, at first, the excitement of finding some answers and then the pain of getting those answers?
I can definitely relate to that. And I kind of got choked up hearing that because, you know, we've been on this search for our family lineage for quite some time, for over 20 years. And we were very excited to find connections to so many really good people. We've got Tuskegee Airmen ancestry, you know, we've got World War II heroics. But one thing that really shook me, and I'm looking at it right now, was a copy of a page of a slave manifest dated between the years of 1807 and 1860. And seeing the name on this, her name was Lucy Howard, and she was estimated to have been born in 1832. It names the ship that she was shipped on to arrive in New Orleans in 1845 at 13 years old. That would have been like a great, 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 great grandmother. And when I look at this, it tears me up, you know, and I just feel really honestly that anyone who pursues knowing more about their slave owner generate, you know, those family histories and connecting with those descendants or those people, really, I don't feel emotionally strong enough to do that. I don't know that I would reach out. I do want to find out more, and I will pursue it. But this stops me in my tracks right now, because I just recently was sent this document, and it's troubling, and it's, you know, it's just emotionally just quite jarring.
Tej, when you think about the way people who are alive today understand their own histories. I mean, it's one thing. It's one thing to hear, you know, your story, Cheryl, Pharrell. It's another to think about what descendants of the people who owned enslaved people would feel and think today. And it is. I'm sort of trying to be generous. I mean, it's a complex set of emotions. But I think the email that we got from the listener, Tej, talking about generational wealth, is why. When people say things like, you know, you hear some white people, I mean, I'm not trying to generalize, but you hear some people say, well, that's not me. That was generations ago. You know, don't put that on me. The issue that the emailer is bringing up is it may not be you today, right now, but you may be still benefiting from the generational cascade effect of everything that was tied to that. So, Tej, what responsibility do you feel families have today in understanding their histories?
That's a really tough question for me to answer. I do feel that this country, just as Cheryl just mentioned, that the country does owe some debt to us, you know, the descendants of the enslaved. I feel that families, I do feel that they should be made aware, or they should look into their histories and accept that the reality is that, yes, they do and have benefited from our servitude or the servitude of our ancestors. But I honestly, apart from just the awareness and at least taking some, you know, holding, I guess not a responsibility, but just coming to terms with their ancestors were responsible. Their family has some responsibility. I that's a very difficult question for me to answer, Evan.
I understand.
I feel mostly that there should be some type of, I don't know, by way of conversation, by way of investment, by way of being a part of some of the solutions that are put out and that are spoken about, that they should take part in those things.
Yeah.
But there is no easy answer.
Well, on that subject, let me get a phone call from a listener named Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. It's a good show. When I called in, I almost thought I couldn't. I couldn't do it. I've been burdened with this my whole life. My great-great-great-grandfather moved to West Tennessee with five slaves. And so I grew up in a small town of 2,000 people in a segregated town where there were black people on the other side of town named Jordan. And I was too much a part of it. I was too blind to realize until I bet I was 40 years old that, oh, I know why their name's Jordan. And now that I'm old, I've thought, oh, what an opportunity I had. I should have reached out to those people, but they're gone now, and I don't know that I could have done it. I just don't know. The family didn't talk about owning slaves. It was an embarrassment, I think. There are people who are proud about it, but I think it was an embarrassment. And the only time they would ever talk about it is they might say, oh, they were treated so well, they stayed with us after the war. Mm-hmm. And we all know that we all know what that's about. There was no opportunities. And so unless they were in a terribly abusive situation, they had no alternative but to stay. But I can't make these people you're talking to feel better, and I don't think they can make me feel better. It's hard.
Cheryl, do you want to just offer some thoughts?
They're just very emotional. I want to thank the caller. It's funny. My family's from West Tennessee also. Haywood County is in West Tennessee.
Is that the Haywood County people? Yeah, I know Haywood County very well.
Yeah, my family lived in Brownsville.
There were Jordans over there. Brownsville was a very prosperous area, and even before my part of Tennessee was developed.
Yeah. So maybe it's a blessing that we connect over the airwaves. But mm-hmm. I want to tell you, thank you for your comments. I speak for myself only. Let's just put it that way. But I think the very fact that you acknowledge what happened is a big step forward, because there are a lot of people even today who believe that it was the right thing to do and that we were savages and we're still savages. And that's a shame. And
yep.
I think it's important. The remorse is important. And I wish that remorse would happen in Congress, because this country is unrepentant for what it did to African citizens. They had no right to allow it to double down on it, to legalize it from the lowest level of government to the highest level. And we're all paying the price. And, you know, my friend, we were all enslaved. People like to say, oh, they were enslaved. No, this whole country was enslaved. If some people are not free, then none of us is free. And so we are now paying the price for their lack of foresight. So I appreciate you calling in. It really means so much. And I think the best way to move forward from here is to, you know, stay looped in with African American cultural activities and get to know the people that you were probably taught to hate when you were a child. And, you know,
No, I wasn't taught to hate. I didn't grow up in that kind of family.
But oh, good.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I thought you said that your family members didn't talk about it and that you were in a segregated community.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that my immediate family was especially racist. I mean, it's hard to get away from racist tendencies in the South, as you know. But
right.
there were people who were less racist than others, and I'm afraid my parents at their time were considered liberals. They wouldn't be today, but they were then, you know. Okay,
right. I understand. Well, I'm not passing judgment in any way, and I'm a New Yorker, so you know it's a different dynamic, and I don't even claim to understand what's going on down there in the South.
If you're a Southerner,
yeah,
and you're open to this discussion, a good topic is the nuances of racism in the South. Racism is very nuanced. I have a first cousin who you might think is a racist. On the other hand, if a black person or a brown person's house burned down, he'd be there in their front door with $500 and say, "Don't pay me back." So that's nuance. I don't know how you deal with the nuances of racism. It's people from other places don't understand it.
Right.
I have trouble with it. But
yes.
It's very complex.
It's very complex. And I would never pass judgment or even claim to fully understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that I appreciate you calling in and sharing and opening your heart.
Thank you, guys. I'm going to hang up now.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Steve, thank you. And I'll just echo Cheryl. I mean, there's nobody who can absolve anything that happened. I mean, nobody has that power. But I do think that at least one necessary step is a continuing acknowledgement and a conversation, even when it's hard. So, Steve, for that, I'm grateful. And you can see Nick Sheedy as the lead genealogist for Finding Your Roots Season 7, which is happening now. And the episode tonight includes Pharrell Williams kind of on the same kind of journey, understanding. You know, Nick, these kind of conversations come right out of this show. I mean, I do suspect this is part of the mission, isn't it? I mean, understanding ourselves better.
Absolutely. And, you know, Pharrell Williams and the other guest tonight is going to be Casey Lemons, mm-hmm. and there's some great stories there. I think there were some family mysteries that we solved using DNA. But, yeah, I can comment on a few things that were mentioned. There was a slave manifest, a ship manifest mentioned for a slave arriving at New Orleans in the 1840s. And those are very interesting because the international slave trade was abolished in 1807 or 1808. And so when you see these ship manifests with slaves on them arriving at U.S. ports, say New Orleans or Charleston, South Carolina, those are all slaves that are being transported from somewhere else in the United States, typically being transported further south to be sold into the Deep South, where there was a big demand for slave labor. And I have no doubt that slaves were being smuggled in, but you don't see records of that. You don't see records of new slaves arriving from the Caribbean or from Africa because it was illegal and they did not make a record of it. And so if there were smuggling going on, they would have said, "Oh, these slaves came from, you know, Maryland or, you know, Washington, D.C. We bought them, you know, from somewhere else in the U.S. And so, but those are very, very interesting record groups because it's sometimes the only records we find of slaves as they are sold, you know, out of a slave-owning family and sold to slave brokers or slave traders, and then they end up someplace else. But the thing that's interesting to me, and we've talked about surnames a little bit, is that sometimes those slaves already have surnames. And it's a big question about surnames, especially in Maryland. We see slaves carrying surnames that are not the same surnames as the people that held them in slavery. And there's a big question mark. Where did these names come from? Did they choose their own name? Is it a former owner's name? The answer is, we don't know for sure. But it's probably a big reason why we are not successful so much of the time in identifying slave owners around the time of emancipation in the Civil War, because you have a surname that former slaves are using. And maybe you don't find slave owners with that name in the county. And where did it come from? And, you know, we don't know. But I would guess that we're only successful maybe 20-25% of the time to identify the slave owners when you're talking about the Civil War and Emancipation era. And the reason is probably because those former slaves did not adopt the surname of the last people that held them in slavery. That's my only conclusion, because so oftentimes we find no slave owners in that county or the neighboring counties even. And so it's a curious phenomenon. But beyond that, I mentioned right off the bat that I hope that our show, Finding Your Roots, inspires people to learn more about their family history. but also that creates a personal connection to that history. History doesn't live out in some detached reality. History isn't just something written in a book somewhere. We are connected to history personally, directly. And, you know, talking about cycles of poverty and how it trickles down through generations, you know, that's a generational cause and effect, that we are directly connected to things that our ancestors did, whether it was a minor decision somebody made. Oh, they decided to go down to the store today and they happened to meet a man or a woman. It turns their fancy. They end up getting married. And just the decision to, you know, go down to the store today and you happen to meet the person you're going to have children with. From that to people deciding to, you know, move states away, hundreds of miles away, you know, changes the whole trajectory of a family. And that can have repercussions for generations. And so encouraging people and inspiring people to learn more about their own family history gives you a personal connection to history in general. And how did we get where we are? And of course, that then informs us better how to deal with our current situation. And today's, you know, events are going to be tomorrow's history. And what do we do going forward? You know, how do we inspire people and empower people to really try to make the world a better place? And so by learning about how what your ancestors did either to endure and to persevere and to survive, and sometimes we cover great stories about people who did amazing things. And either way, I would hope that that's inspiring, that, you know, you can make a difference today that can have a lasting effect tomorrow. And, you know, talking about slavery is not something of the distant past. You know, depending how you want to define it, between 25 million and 45 million people are held in some form of slavery today around the world. Millions, tens of millions of people are held in some form of slavery today. And so, you know, this is not something of the distant past that ended in 1865. You know, there are elements of human exploitation and human trafficking that continue today in one form or another. And so I would hope that, you know, we encourage people to think about the bigger picture, mm-hmm. and what can we do to make the world a better place.
Well, let me jump in and say that for listeners who are familiar with the PBS show, you know, and are thinking in the way T just thinking, or the way Cheryl has done this kind of work, and thinking about your own family history, we all would want to have a Nick Sheedy, lead genealogist for Finding Your Roots Season 7, do work for us. We would all want Henry Louis Gates Jr. to walk in with a book and say, hey, here it is, open the book, we've got it all for you. It doesn't always work out so snugly, and after we take our only break of the hour, what I want to do in our remaining time is talk about resources, about what Nick and Cheryl and Tej can offer you if you are thinking about pursuing a course, you know, no matter your family's background, no matter where your family is from, or, you know, really, if you're just thinking about how to pursue this, let's talk about, on the other side of this break, we'll talk about resources. I also want to mention, please watch WXXI.org/roots, WXXI.org/roots, for a virtual screening in March with a local panel featuring local stories and services to support pursuing your family history. Should be fascinating stuff. And in the meantime, go to WXXI.org/roots for the kind of resources related to local services, because, you know, libraries often have their own licenses for electronic services, virtual meetings, and different services available. So let's take this only break. We're going to come back in a moment with Nick Sheedy, lead genealogist for Finding Your Roots on PBS. Cheryl Wills is an award-winning journalist and anchor for Spectrum News NY1, and the author of a number of works telling the story of her family, her ancestry, and what she has learned. Tej Jenkins is the host of WXXI's Arts in Focus and a manager and producer for WXXI. This is our only break, and we're right back with them. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, a growing group has been calling on the Rochester City School District to get rid of SROs, school resource officers. We're talking about police in schools, not just as a budget item, but what it means to students and parents. In our second hour, we talk to the new music director for the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. Andreas Delfs joins us on Connections. Talk with you on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me start with Tej. So, Tej Jenkins, what did you...
Hello.
What's the first step you take when you start pursuing your family history? And what would you tell people who are thinking about doing this on their own?
Well, the very first step is please ask your elder family members lots of questions and document everything. Write everything down. But what we did was pursued our search at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. That was where my sister lived nearby. And so she was able to start the majority of this search process there using the local library, looking up. She looked up microfilm. She looked at she was doing research for death records and finding birth records through using also newspaper archives as well. So that was like the bulk of how she was coming across a lot of this information. And then in the years when Ancestry.com became available, that was where we started to do more research.
Are you pretty satisfied with what you've been able to find?
I feel yes. We were really able to recover a lot. And I apologize. I'm sorry that earlier, you know, I was emotional. But I do want to say to people out there, please, it is worth the search and it's worth looking for. And I hope that you are inspired to do this because there are so many great connections that we have made with our research. We found family members that we had no idea we had. And that's been very wonderful, connecting with them, and they're filling in more of the history through emails and through writing to us online. We've been able to find, like I said earlier, some heroes also exist in our family and just some really good people that we are descended from. But I feel very happy with what we found, but I would like to go back farther. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be great to be able to go back to the continent. And so that's a real big wish and a big dream for my future.
Okay. Cheryl Wills, where would you tell people who want to start this journey on their own, where would you advise them to start?
Yes, she was absolutely right and hit on all the right points. I think the first thing I did was the census records. That's a fascinating piece of American history, every 10 years on the O's, and you just keep going back and you see your parents turn into children, you see your grandparents turn into children and so forth. And the 1870 census is especially fascinating because this is the first time we see Africans who were enslaved documented with full names as real people, and they're also now American citizens. And that's when I saw my Civil War descendant grandfather, Sandy Wills, with Emma, his new wife, and their new baby, and that blew my mind. And another thing, in addition to census records, don't forget military records. The part of the reason I went on this search was my father was killed when I was 13 on a motorcycle accident, and we had all this, you know, army stuff around the house. And I was just fascinated, like, who was this guy? He left us so quickly. He never told us about his service. And then when I started digging and looking into military records, I got Sandy Wills' military records once I realized he existed. And I got his honorable discharge from 1866, which was fascinating. I got his enlistment records when he enlisted with five enslaved boys from his plantation, from the Wills plantation. I show all of this to students, and I do many presentations in schools and sometimes with professors and teachers, and they're blown away. So when you get those enlistment records from the Civil War, I'm telling you, they are absolutely fascinating. So I highly recommend that. And one last thing I'd like to share is that the man that owned my grandma Emma, he was a wealthy businessman. Of course, his slave plantation made him very rich. And his family didn't know what to do with all of his tax receipts. So after he died in 1861, right at the dawn of the Civil War, they donated all of his records later on to the Tennessee State Archives. And I went and got them because they were public property. And that's a story all in itself. I went document by document.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I really discovered what went on that Moore plantation with my family.
Amazing. You know, Nick Sheedy, to the points that our guests are making about starting just by conversations with your living family members, they may have more in the way of stories and information and documents than we expect. And starting, that's a great place to start. I will say this, Nick, that's not a full substitute for actual records, the kind of stuff that Cheryl's talking about, and that can be hard to find. For our family, we probably will never get the full story of how our name became Dawson. People ask me, Dawson, is that British? Dawson is nothing. My family names are Gustafson and Fraunfelder. Pretty Swedish and pretty German. My actual last name is Gustafson. Dawson became the family name when my great-grandfather Axel came to the United States from Sweden and moved to Jamestown, as a lot of Swedes were doing at the time. Didn't speak much English and had a strong accent. And they told him, you want this job? Change your name and learn English. And they gave him Dawson. Now, that's what several of the older family members argue. There's another story that is a little more salacious that I can't repeat on the radio, but our family can't even agree on how we got the name. So it's another thing to say, how do you start to track when our name isn't even Dawson? You know, and so what would you tell people, you know, in terms of actually getting information, where would you point them?
Well, and to speak to your specific situation, you know, the Scandinavian countries and Iceland still today don't use static surnames. They have patronyms. So Gustafsson was not a surname at the time he left, probably. It meant that he was the son of Gustav.
that doesn't help me.
You know, Gustav Andersson,
I know.
Son of Andersson. And so, you know, a lot of these Scandinavians are arriving in America, and they're told you need to pick a surname. And so they use whatever their patronym was, mm-hmm. and that's why you get so many Johanssons and Svensons and Bjorgensons and, you know, whatever.
Larson, yep.
But we also see occasionally people from Scandinavian countries will adopt the name of, say, their farm or a local area. And you do see way back when, you do see people adopting what we might consider to be a surname. But it is an interesting phenomenon there. And it's also, it's kind of an American thing. You know, you're reinventing yourself, picking a new surname. And Dawson does not sound Scandinavian. It does not sound like the name of a Swedish farm. And so, you know, you may have another a salacious story, as you mentioned, but we see that with immigrants, you know, especially some of our Jewish guests, their ancestors Anglicanized their names or just chose a totally new name. And we definitely see it with African Americans coming out of slavery, choosing a name for whatever reason, you know, a name of their own. And so, yeah, that is an interesting phenomenon. And to add to where do you start, you know, yeah, talk to your family members, older family members, because they may have heard something from an aunt that nobody else remembers. You get a little detail. And sometimes, you know, I guess here's what I would say. Don't just ask for the family stories. Ask for some of the nuts and bolts of genealogy research. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you remember your great-grandfather. Well, was he living when you were born, you know, or was he already deceased? And try to narrow down a death date or a death year. Where did he die? Where did he live? So now you know where to look. And so when you talk to family relatives or older family members, yeah, get the stories. And if you don't have any older relatives living that you can ask, write down the stories you might remember. But also, if you can, don't just ask for those stories, but ask for some of the nuts and bolts to help steer your paper trail research. And then, yes, you do a census survey. Try to find people in those censuses. You try to acquire birth, death, and marriage records. Birth and death certificates, depending on the state, may be filed local, county, or town level, and also in duplicate at the state level. Some of those are easier to get than others. New York's difficult to get recent, say, within the last 50 years of a death record unless you can prove you're related to those people. Other states, it's much easier to get those records. Some states have more comprehensive birth and death indexes than others. Mississippi, we don't have good indexes. But other states, we have pretty good birth and death indexes. So you can look up a record, you know, get the certificate number, and then it's really easy to order it. And then as you go back in the censuses, you start to find older relatives, many of grandmothers living in the household, and you note, how old is that person? Where are they born? Where is their mother and father born? Now you start to profile the family, and you're building a profile of people. Even if you don't have names yet, you're building a profile, and so you kind of have an idea where to look. And yes, when you get back to the 1870 census, that's an extremely important census for anyone coming out of slavery, because most often those former slaves are still living in the same area, sometimes probably living in the same slave quarters on the same land that they worked as slaves.
Amazing.
And besides the 1870 U.S. census, in Alabama, for instance, you get an 1866 state census. And so now you're within 1 year of the Civil War.
I just got to jump in, Nick, because the music means that our listeners are just going to have to continue to follow along with us on talking about resources. Here are several for you. WXXI.org/roots. A lot more there. And, of course, Finding Your Roots. Season 7 continues, and a powerful episode this evening on PBS and WXXI-TV. Nick Sheedy is the lead genealogist for the show. Thank you, Nick. I wish we had more time, but such great stuff this hour. And thanks for the work you guys are doing.
Thank you. Thank you all.
And, of course, to Tej Jenkins, host of WXXI's Arts in Focus and manager and producer for WXXI. Thank you, Tej.
You're welcome, Evan. Thank you for having me.
And Cheryl Wills is the author of a number of works you ought to look up and learn a lot more about her story, and it might help you. Cheryl, thanks for sharing those stories with us.
Be well, Evan. This was awesome. Thank you.
You got it. Megan Mack, producer, Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you tomorrow.